Anthony Dansbury, he spent now almost half his life in prison. His lawyers say that the evidence that convicted him was unreliable at best. You communicated with Dansbury through his cousin just after Christmas, right?
Yes.
And he told you that Christmas Day, like more than 20 others now that he has spent in prison, was nothing special to him.
That's because he has given up so much of his liberty, obviously, on a questionable conviction. And in his view, he should have been released years ago on the basis of what he sees as clear and convincing evidence of his innocence. And for him, Christmas means something entirely different.
Have you talked to him since the commutation?
I have not. He's not been released, actually. And it's ironic that everybody rejoices once a decision is made, but there are all these administrative details that delay the actual physical release.
So we heard, you know, just a brief description of Anthony Dansbury here just before this interview came on. You know, and that, for most people, is how they know Anthony Dansbury. Who is he?
Well, at the time of his arrest and conviction, he was a 27-year-old African-American in suburban Oak Park who had limited skills. He's been learning disabled, but has been able to function in certain areas throughout life. At this point, he had been living with relatives, lost his parents early on, and had been living with a couple of aunts, and basically was self-sufficient at 27, but again had limited capabilities with respect to reading and comprehension skills.
And that played into some of the issues, you know, the reason that the Center on Wrongful Convictions called evidence unreliable. You know, one of them was, well, he signed a confession.
Right. And, you know, people who have analyzed the criminal justice system have found problems at every level. Certainly the confessions can be problematic. This case was problematic at every turn.
Is there any doubt in your mind that he is innocent?
There's no doubt at all. Interrogation was based on an anonymous tip. There was no basis for his retention. When he signed the document he thought was his release from interrogation, it wound up being a confession, which was not observed. It was not video recorded. So there is just his word against the word of the arresting officers. There were problems with respect to the lineup. He was the most distinctive person in the lineup, so tended to stand out. There were six people who witnessed something that occurred during the crime in question. And of those six, only three could make some kind of determination as to ID, and two of those three said that Anthony was not the one. Only one eyewitness made a positive ID, and even her testimony seemed to shift at times. So, and then there was the DNA evidence. Apparently, the assailant in this homicide touched a car on his escape route, and a palm print was lifted, and that wound up not matching Anthony's. And this is where the story seems to change, where the eyewitness who testified said, well, that wasn't the palm print she was identifying. So, again, there have been issues, factual and also legal issues, along the way, and this is somebody who's gotten caught up in a system that clearly, in his case, was broken.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, you look at the different things. There's a pardon, commutation, different things that a governor can do. A commutation is not the same as a declaration of innocence.
Exactly. The lawyers had to make a strategic decision about which route to take, and based on everything that they had before them, they thought that commutation was going to the petition for commutation was going to stand the best chance of a positive outcome. Then you go back and see what else you can do to help the in this case Anthony Dansbury put his life back together again. With the pardon, obviously you have the opportunity to wipe the slate clean. With the commutation, it's basically saying, okay, we're gonna release you now on the basis of the time served and good behavior and all that, but there is still a record.
And you mentioned, you know, his lawyers through the Center on Wrongful Convictions. There was one in particular, a woman who he'd worked with for quite some time, who had really followed his case and pushed for his case and pushed for this to be heard and pushed for him to be released. And you wrote recently that she was not able to see this release. What happened?
Jane Rowley died on Christmas Day. She had been suffering from cancer, And she had been, in many ways, Anthony's angel, his champion in this case, and not only had devoted her formidable legal skills, but also her personal dedication to him and to seeing a just outcome in this case. And as he explained to me through his cousin, he was heartbroken as a result of her loss. He cared more about she and her family in this period of grieving than he cared even about his own release. He was more concerned about she and her family and expressed that in very moving ways.
Now, you've written before that this case has a number of different effects. Obviously, the impact on Dansbury himself. But you also wrote that there's a direct impact on the rest of us. What did you mean by that?
Cases like this give us pause, raise questions about whether we can rely on the system. We're not saying that it's totally unfair, but there are these cracks in the system that some people fall through. So it would make those of us who are law-abiding a bit wary of encounters with the law and what might happen. So there's a social cost with respect to our faith, our confidence in the system. And now when you look at the context of the national discourse we're having with respect to justice and communities of color, traditionally marginalized communities, a legitimate discourse that's unfolding right now, you see that there's some basis for that in the experiential reality that some people have lived. So there's that. But then there's also the cost with respect to justice itself. Here's a case where you have an innocent man who has spent half of his life in prison and is now going to spend another portion of his life trying to sort out what life he has left. And you also have victims and the survivors of victims who have not really seen justice, because while an innocent man has languished in prison, a guilty party has gone free. So where's the justice in that?